I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. Several hundred men have packed themselves into an abandoned high school. It's hot. There's a lot of pushing. They've all heard that this is some sort of gathering place designated by the Iraqi National Congress. That's the political organization led by recently returned Iraqi exiles, a group that has some backing of the American administration to get Iraq back on its feet again.
All these people are now gathering for the first time. Most of them are looking for a job.
A man called Amr admits that these days many people are more motivated by the need to eat rather than the prospect of politics.
I came here yesterday and today I just come here to find a job as a translator. I have two languages and I was working in Baghdad airport, and now the airport is not operating for the moment. So I'm looking for a job. I need to have a job.
As we speak, a man who's been listening in decides to interrupt.
But I'm wondering...
Who told you? Who told you that we are here looking for jobs? Who told you?
That's what I see.
Speak about yourself only, please.
I talked to him frankly.
Most of us looking for jobs. No. Most of us are here to register for in the National Congress, Iraqi National Congress. Most of them.
The man who has interrupted us has a story like so many others in this country. His name is Atajabar Abbas. Though he worked as a mechanical engineer, he says he was jailed three times by Saddam Hussein. His brother was executed. And now he's filled with the excitement of freedom from that oppression.
I feel that the air is fresh.
The air is fresh.
Yes. I feel the air is fresh. I feel the food has a taste. You see?
You can taste the food?
I can taste the food, yes, after 35 years. All the 35 years, the air was dirty. You see? The food has no taste. You see? I only filling my stomach, that's all. But without taste. Now, I feel that the air is fresh. You see, the food has a taste. The life is beautiful. I feel that the life... I am 53 years now, but I has hope, you see. But before 2 weeks, there was no hope. I felt that there was no hope, you see, in the life. But now, I feel that there is a hope to live, you see, to continue to make what I couldn't make previously. You see, I feel it. I feel that freedom is a very beautiful thing. Very, very beautiful thing.
A few blocks away, about 10 men have taken over a compound once occupied by Saddam Hussein's bath party. A white sheet has been strung across the entrance with the words Hizbi Islami Iraqi, the Iraqi Islamic Party. Dozens of wooden crates are strewn about on the ground. The boxes once held grenades and guns. Now they're empty. The men are eating cucumbers and boiling tea on a fire fed with wood from the broken crates. The head man is Khalim Ismail. I ask him about the other party offices I've just visited. I ask him if his Islamic party will work with the Iraqi National Congress, the people backed by the Americans. And specifically, I ask him if his people will follow the leadership of the former exile who's now returned. The man is called Ahmed Chalabi.
The people don't know who's Ahmed Al-Chalabi. He's an outsider. They don't know anything about him. He didn't know how the people suffered during the last years. So they want to someone who can represent them and can express their feeling and then their sufferings.
All across Baghdad, other new party offices are opening for business, pitching for the support of the people. The communists are publishing a newspaper. The Patriotic Union of Kurdistan is painting its slogans over old portraits of Saddam. There's the Free Officer Civilian Movement. And the old building that once belonged to the World Public Women's Union is now home to the Iraqi National Unity Gathering. On the roof of that building, there's a man with a gun. Just moments before we were there, someone had driven by, firing at them with a pistol. Abdul Basir Othman Rizoki was holding the shell casings. He says it may get rough.
Tomorrow we will go to the American troops and tell them about what happened today, and we'll ask for their protection or their permission for us to carry guns.
Connection listeners, can democracy take root in Iraq? Is it naive to believe that a people who have suffered under a dictatorship and never known democracy will embrace a secular multi-party system? And in seeking to help build such a system, should the U.S. support one particular group or stand back and let Iraqis sort it out for themselves? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And a reminder for you, our website at theconnection.org has photos of the people at the party offices that I met, as well as the people you've just heard talking. With us today, Amatzia Baram. He's a professor of Middle East Studies at Haifa University in Israel, but he's currently a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's a longtime student of Iraq. He edited the recent book, Iraq's Road to War. He's in his studio in Washington. And joining me in the studio here in Baghdad, we have Saab Setna. Saab's been an advisor to Ahmed Chalabi for 12 years now, and he's here in Baghdad working with the Iraqi National Congress. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
I want to start here in Baghdad with Saab. You heard the suspicions and the questions and the people's voices in the tape just moments ago. Are you hearing a lot of that on the street, a lot of suspicion?
We're hearing a lot of opinions from Iraqis. People come to the Iraqi National Congress office literally by the hundreds. Some are looking for jobs, but by no means all of them are. Many of them are coming to offer support, but some of them are not. Some of them are coming to offer differing opinions and say you should do this or you should do that, or you're too close to the Americans, or you're here with the Americans to steal our oil or something like that. That's fine. From our standpoint, it's a good thing that people are coming and expressing their opinions for the first time in 35 years.
Simple question. Who's in charge these days?
The United States military.
Period.
Yes.
What have you heard from them? What's the military saying to the Iraqi National Congress and to the other political parties then?
The military is saying we are in charge. In fact, General McKiernan, the commanding general on the ground in Iraq, issued a proclamation today stating that coalition forces are the sole military and political authority in Iraq today, and no one else should claim any kind of authority or should try to take over civil institutions or public buildings and the like. And we think that's a very good thing. We're very glad they made that statement, and we support it fully.
Does that mean that the people we met at the Hezbi Islami Iraqi who had taken over the Ba'ath Party headquarters will be told they have to give that property up?
They might in fact be told they have to move out of if it's considered a public building. I'm not sure how the Ba'ath Party's assets will be disposed. I don't know, but they may be.
Saab, doesn't it tip the playing field even more towards the Iraqi National Congress if the people who are squatting in the abandoned government buildings are told, sorry, that's not the way it works? Isn't there a risk that Iraqi people will see that and say, oh, you know, we don't stand a chance. It's all going to come from the INC.
I hope not, and that's certainly not the intention of the INC. It's very important to say that the INC, Dr. Ahmed Chalabi, feel very strongly that no one should be anointed, no one should appoint themselves to any position of power here. What we need to do is involve the people in the process of choosing an interim administration and, of course, in the long term, a future democratic government.
And you spent the better part of the last few days in meetings. Is that what's going on now at the sports club where you call home now?
That's exactly what's going on. People come in from morning until night to express their opinions. There are community leaders, tribal leaders, religious leaders, professional people, academics. I could go on. I mean, we had a group of bank managers. We had a group of lawyers. We had professors from the technological university. So many people are coming, and there's a lot of give and take, and a lot of what INC officials do is listen.
Let's go to Amatzia Baram, who's sitting in the Washington studio. Professor Baram, you have a sort of longer range view watching what's happening from Washington, but with particular interest. Is the Iraqi National Congress the game in town at this point from your perspective?
It's one of the contending powers, and it's a good thing it is. But one has to look at the broader picture, and the broader picture shows us that you have a number of young and budding ulama, mujtahids, or rather clergy, mullahs, especially in the Shi'i parts of Baghdad, in Shu'la, in Kadhimiyya, in Madinat Saddam, which some call now Madinat Sadr, but I don't know if that's the name. In any case, this is a huge Shi'i, almost purely Shi'i neighborhood. They are contending for, there is a huge power vacuum in Iraq, not to be surprised by that, but it's a fact. The INC has a crucial role, because the INC is a democratic organization. And if you ask me, should they be given some support, the answer is yes. At the same time, should they be, as Saab pointed out, anointed? He said no, and I agree with him. No, nobody can be anointed. But there is now jockeying for power from every important part of society. And the most powerful so far in Baghdad core of power that still existed under Saddam, even though they were lying very, very low for the last 25, 30 years, are the local religious leaders in Baghdad and in Najaf and to a smaller extent in Karbala. These are the main rivals of any democratic force. And certainly the INC is a democratic force to reckon with.
So, Saab Setna, how do you cope with the particularly fundamentalist clerics who have been calling for close association with Iran? How do you counter the threat that Professor Baram's talking about?
We don't see it as a threat. First of all, we must not confuse an explosion of acts of piety and personal devotion with political Islam. Under Saddam Hussein, a number of religious practices and acts, for example, walking along the roads to Karbala, which you may have seen thousands of people doing in
Indeed.
The last week, were banned or discouraged or made very difficult to do. At this time, people are exhilarated to be free of Saddam Hussein, and people are doing things that they haven't had a chance to do in a long time. People are flocking to religious leaders and mosques. But I don't think one should confuse that with political Islam or increasing influence for Iran or neighboring countries.
Though there has been a rush back to the mosque in the absence or in the vacuum that Dr. Baram describes.
Yeah, there's a vacuum, there's no doubt about that. But I don't think it's something that we're unduly concerned about.
Connection listeners, you're listening to the program coming to you live from Baghdad today. We're interested in hearing from you on our program. Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And join the conversation about the political future of this country at such a crucial time. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection, live from Baghdad. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. This hour, we're again broadcasting live from Baghdad and trying to make sense of the shift into some form of representative government in Iraq. One healthy sign, as Saab Setna points out, is that there are about as many opinions here as to what should happen as you'd find in more mature democracies. One trouble is that after 35 years under authoritarian rule, not many Iraqis here really know what a democracy is or how it's supposed to work or take shape. The ones to watch right now are in the Iraqi National Congress. That's a group led by the recently returned Iraqi exile, Ahmed Chalabi. But Muslims, Kurds, and others are still a little suspicious of this lot, in part because they have the backing of the Americans. Now, Connection listeners, we're interested in your thoughts about how this will all unfold, whether today's American military occupation can lead to a government run by Iraqis for Iraqis. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Professor Amatzia Baram is with us from the Saban Center at the Brookings Institution. He's currently a visiting fellow there. Here in Baghdad, we have Saab Setna. He is an advisor to the leader of the Iraqi National Congress, Ahmed Chalabi. He spent the last few days scuttling from meeting to meeting in media encounters, such as the one that he's taking part in with us.
This is Gail Harris reporting from the Connection Studios in Boston. You've been listening to a special edition of The Connection live from Baghdad, and we'll continue and get back to Dick in just a moment. But in the meantime, let me pose a question to Professor Baram. Professor, you're there in Washington, and I heard you say a moment ago that there's no surprise that there's a huge power vacuum right now in Iraq, that there are a lot of people jockeying for power. I wonder if you would describe, in general, the Iraqi people for us, because I think your view offers some insight into some of the challenges there. For example, you've described them as being the most gifted people in the Middle East.
That's correct. Well, the Iraqis have a huge number of people, a very huge percentage of people who can read and write, which is something which in the Middle East is not all that widespread. They have fantastic artists. They have great poets. They have excellent engineers and scientists. This is a very gifted nation. I sometimes am tempted to think that there is something genetic about it, some kind of a genetic heritage from ancient Sumer, Akkad, Babylon, Ashur, Chaldea, and so on. I mean, this is after the cradle of civilization. I'm not surprised that they are so gifted. The problem is that as gifted as they are also divided very, very in a very problematic fashion. And now when there's this power game, power vacuum and power game behind that, the question is which way things would move. Everything is possible. I'd say all bets are off. I still believe that there is a reasonable chance for a democracy in Iraq, but you have roughly 60%, between 55 and 60% of Iraq are Shi'i Arabs, Arabs whose people who speak Arabic as a mother tongue and who are Shiites, Shi'i Muslims. And then you have about between 15 and 20% Sunni Arab Muslims, and you have about 18, 17% Kurds, and then who are mostly Sunni Muslims, and then you have Christians and so on. The point is that even the Shiites, for example, or the Kurds, or the Sunnis, are not united. You have, today we see a bitter struggle, even murderous struggle, between Shi'i Ayatollahs and Shi'i clergy over power against each other. And there are so many Shia, the majority of the Shia are not at all fundamentalistic, not at all radically Islamist.
It's, Dick Gordon back on the line from Baghdad. We apparently had a short blip in our satellite connection, but we're back. I want to pick up on what you were talking about and turn to Saab here in the studio, because, of course, one of the tasks of the group, the Iraqi National Congress, is to try and reconcile these very difficulties and divisions that you're describing. Saab, how much of that is complicated by the fact that and you've heard this, I've heard this on the street, some people are turning up their nose at the INC saying, well, there are a bunch of exiles who've been off in London living the good life while we've been suffering under Saddam Hussein.
Sure, they have every right to say that about the INC, but one should remember that 4 million Iraqis were driven out of their country by Saddam Hussein's dictatorship. And the INC and the rest of the Iraqi opposition has been in the forefront of the struggle against Saddam Hussein. And members of the INC and other members of the Iraqi opposition, wherever they are in the world, have made great sacrifices personally with their families in the struggle against Saddam. So they definitely have a role. But in any case, the INC is back in Baghdad. We're here in Iraq.
But is there a lot of pressure on you to make sure that whoever you have who's an expert in, you know, electrical engineering and working on the power system is immediately paired up with someone who has been in Baghdad over that period of time to try and shed that label of being a bunch of exiles?
I think the most important thing is to get the right people in the jobs, the most competent people in the jobs, whether they lived here or if they lived in Norway for the last 5 years. It doesn't matter. There's Iraqis are Iraqis. There's no discrimination anymore. It's more about competence and getting the job done.
One of the Iraqis who's been away from home for a long time is still away from home, but he's joining us on the line from Washington. Laith Kuba was actually one of the founders of the Iraqi National Congress, and a few months back decided that he would split from that organization and form the Iraqi National Group. Laith, what was your problem with the Iraqi National Congress? Why did you decide to steer away from the group that you helped found?
Well, the best thing the group produced back in 92 was its political statement, which did capture the imagination of many Iraqis and brought many groups under the organization. Where the group has failed and failed badly is in creating a coherent structure that represents these groups. Today, as you talk about the INC being back in Baghdad, I think you're specifically talking about one person with his paid staff. The rest of the leadership of the INC are all in London, Sharif Ali, the two Kurdish parties who are also supposed to be part of the INC. They state over and over again that they have not met as leadership. And what happened is basically there is one person with very strong ties in Washington, using the INC name and its heritage of 10 years. But I am not very sure who does the INC.
But Saab Setna makes the point, Laith, that the Iraqi National Congress is here in Baghdad.
Absolutely.
They're trying to connect with the people here, trying to get things moving. You've got to give them some credit for that, no?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there is. I think credit was given to everybody who opposed Saddam Hussein. But opposing Saddam Hussein is one thing, and being in power and how you get to power is another thing. We believe the real test now is for people to either elect you or endorse you. I would like to see volunteers working for the INC for its what the INC stands for, not for a person and paid salaries. What we have is 700 armed men. Now, to me, this is an extremely alarming sign when you start conducting politics under guns. If we endorse...
So talk a bit about this, because when I came to the sports club, I did see the soldiers with the INC, with the FIF on their shoulder.
Yes,
for
the
FIF
stands for Free Iraqi Forces. It's a group of Iraqis who have been trained as soldiers and organized into a unit called the Free Iraqi Forces. And they are under the command of General Tommy Franks. They're part of the coalition. They're integrated into the American or to the Allied war plan. And they're, in fact, quite distinct from the INC as a political organization. They are, they're under the command of General Tommy Franks and his field commanders.
I want to pick up on something else that Laith mentioned, because that's not entirely clear to me, and that is what the long-term goal of the Iraqi National Congress is. Does Dr. Chalabi want to be president of Iraq? Is this part of the move in that direction?
He said on numerous occasions that he does not, and I take him at his word. I've never heard him say anything different privately.
So what's the goal here?
The goal of the Iraqi National Congress was always the removal of Saddam Hussein's regime and the establishment of a democratic, constitutional, parliamentary system in Iraq.
Laith Kuba, you have been quoted on occasion as eyeing the senior job in Iraq. Are you hoping at some point to come and contest an election here?
Well, I do hope if there was to be an election in Iraq. I think our energy has been focused on how to make that transition to democracy, not talk about it. And we've put some very solid plans. We flagged these plans in the meeting in London. We've been pushing them. We believe even at this stage that the interim government that should be formed in Iraq should be based on representation from the various districts throughout the country and not by exiled groups. You see an emerging order into different districts. We believe people should be brought in under one roof in a conference and let them decide what sort of government they want to have, even at this stage.
Let's go to our callers. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And first up from Appleton, Wisconsin, Nate's on the line. Hi, Nate.
Good morning, guys. Two quick points. One is, although it seems blindingly obvious, it would be very much in the United States' national interest in order to internationalize the transition in Iraq as soon as possible. Because as long as this is a U.S.-only game, the perception, rightly or wrongly, is going to be that this is an imperial eregnum, and that we would have the ability in an international context to allow people from Iraq to select their own leaders with some degree of legitimacy. The other thing that's interesting to think about is that there's a big discussion about the different ethnic groups within Iraq and the fact that it was two provinces that were stitched together by the British. There's also the issue of, well, how do you transition to democracy? I think a real possibility is to have democracy phased in over a multi-year period of time with elections at the lower levels gradually moving up. So you could have city elections.
Nate, I wonder if I can stop you there for a minute, because I'd like to hear Amatzia Baram speak a little bit about his view of the distinction between having the U.S. in charge of Iraq, in fact, you know, not wanting to internationalize, to use your word, the reconstruction. Colin Powell was very specific about that just yesterday. Is that a problem, Professor?
The way I see it, America should remain the main force, America, Britain, the main force, but they should get very quickly a lot of international participants. They need to broaden the shoulder. Iraqis are suspicious, I would say unduly so, but it doesn't matter. They don't know. And I would say that in order to demonstrate that this is really an international effort, a more international presence in Iraq would be very, very useful. But again, I think America, because America has the power, and the Brits should be, if you wish, the main influence. About democracy, well, it's a complicated process. It will take years, that's for sure. The question is how to start off, how to move from where we are now forward. I would say that, first of all, I know Laith Kuba personally, and I think he's a wonderful person, and he's a very gifted person. I allow myself to say that because I'm not an Iraqi, but at the same time, I appreciate very much Ahmad Chalabi, and I think what the INC are doing is extremely important. What I would say is this, look, let 100 flowers bloom. There's no problem there. The 300 or 700 Free Iraq Forces, should be guarding the offices of all the movements that are opening now their particular bureaus, offices in Baghdad. I think it's a good idea. They are part of the American force. Let them do that. That's good. I believe that one way, I'm still worried, even though I agree with Saab, that we haven't yet seen how much support really there is for a fundamentalist, Islamist government in Iraq, like an Islamic Republic in Iraq. In my assessment, it's a minority in the Iraqi public. But we have seen many people who demand that. There is need for a counterweight. The INC is a part of the counterweight. Other organizations too. And people, of course, like Laith Kuba and the Iraqi National Group. So what we need now is a lot of activity of a variety of movements. INC perhaps is the most important one.
One of the problems that I see just on the streets of Baghdad, and Saab Setna, I'm sure it's something that drives you folks in the INC somewhat nuts, is the fact that there's so little information available to the people. A man I met on the street said to me yesterday, did you hear that Ahmed Chalabi had been shot? And, it was as true as anything else he's heard, because it's a city that is just boils with rumors in the absence of any newspaper, in the absence of any organ for you guys to communicate. That must be a nightmare.
That's absolutely right. Some of the people who come to the front gate of the INC offices are simply coming to find out what's going on. They're looking for information. There is an American government-sponsored television station, which is watched for a few hours a day, but many people don't have electricity, so that doesn't make any difference. There are no telephones. There's certainly no internet. No newspapers are being published. And so the people who have battery-operated radios are the ones who have any idea of what's going on.
And Laith Kuba, watching the story unfold day by day from Washington, are you concerned that there's a risk that an absence of information is going to feed dissent in Iraq?
Yes, I am concerned, actually. I think so far Iraq has got away very lightly with absent institutions. There is, of course, a vacuum. People are going to sense it. Somebody is going to emerge and define it. And I'm sure you've touched at some point that the first daily newspaper now is back in Iraq is run by the Communist Party. It's not the only one, but it'll be one amongst many. I think there is vacuum. I think very quickly people will learn how to set up their own local radio stations and start broadcasting. And I just hope that we can move ahead without the country breaking down into violence, because we are postponing issues, and there is a lot of goodwill, there is still a lot of expectation, but there is a point beyond which I think things will start emerging. And, of course, without having an open medium where people can communicate well, things can get worse.
Have you booked your plane ticket, Mr. Kuba?
That's a good point. I would defer answering this question because of the politics regarding my return.
be more specific. I don't know what you're saying.
Well, I mean, it's no secret that there are different forces backing up different candidates and different groups. And I think there are obstacles have been put on my return, and I'm just working on them now. But I'm keen to go back as soon as possible to Baghdad.
Laith Kuba, thanks so much for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Laith Kuba, one of the founders of the Iraqi National Congress, now a leader of the Iraqi National Group. He's also a program officer at the National Endowment for Democracy in Washington. Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're taking a look at the political situation in Iraq at a particularly fascinating time. Saab Setna makes the point earlier in the program that the U.S. military occupying force is the only organization making the rules in Iraq right now. But in the shadow of that big force, a whole lot of other organizations are looking for their opportunities. We'd like to hear from you on that point. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection, live from Baghdad. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from WBUR and NPR. We're broadcasting live from Baghdad this hour and talking about the political opportunities and the pitfalls ahead for this country. Right now, the only real authority in Iraq is the U.S. Army. But those political parties are springing up in many of the buildings abandoned by the old regime, some Islamic-based. Some are calling for all citizens to join. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the political prospects for a nation that's been without any form of representative government for a number of generations. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Also, please visit our website to see the people lining up for their share of democracy and the jobs and the freedom they hope will come with us. With us on the program today, Saab Setna is here in our Baghdad studio. He's an advisor to Ahmed Chalabi and also a spokesperson with the Iraqi National Congress. Amatzia Baram is with us in our Washington studio, or rather in the studios of the Brookings Institution. He's a professor of Middle East Studies at Haifa University in Israel, currently a visiting fellow in Washington. He's the author of a number of books and articles on Iraq, among them Building Toward Crisis, Saddam Hussein's Strategy for Survival, and he edited Iraq's Road to War. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go first to Hussein, who's calling in from Boston. Hi, Hussein.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm very suspicious of Ahmed Chalabi for two reasons. First, I'm afraid that he's going to turn into the Saddam Hussein again, because if you look at the top leadership of the IRC, they're all full of Chalabis. I imagine at some point they're all going to have to change their names, just like Saddam Hussein changed to Kriti. The other point that I'm afraid of is that Mr. Chalabi has been in cahoots with the right wingers in the administration who have taken us into this war with total disregard for the civilian lives. I mean, we've sacrificed civilian lives at the expense of military lives. And I haven't heard Mr. Chalabi object to the tactics that were used. I haven't heard him object to the fact that the Iraqi people will have to pay for this war. I haven't heard them object about, the lootings. I haven't heard them object about, the future, the administration's control of Iraq. So what does your guest have to say?
Just take a breath, if you will. I want to let Savsetna answer some of the points that you're raising. He's here with me. Sav.
Sure. I mean, the point about Ahmed Chalabi turning into another Saddam Hussein is, well, let me answer it by saying he's very, very deeply committed to the principles which are enshrined in the INC Charter, which are democracy, the rule of law, full guarantees of civil, political, and human rights for all Iraqis, guarantees of minority rights, women's rights, federalism. Many of these concepts Ahmed Chalabi introduced into the Iraqi political dialogue. The question of federalism, for example, was never discussed before Mr. Chalabi introduced it. As for the INC leadership being full of Chalabis, that's incorrect. There aren't any other members of the Chalabi family anywhere within the INC leadership or staff. As for Dr. Chalabi not objecting to Iraqi civilians being killed, I mean, all Iraqis feel very deeply that Iraqis have suffered under Saddam Hussein and have suffered in this war, and there's no doubt, especially innocent civilians. But Mr. Chalabi has made statements, has issued statements, has worked, more importantly, has worked very hard with allied military commanders on the ground to prevent the kind of terrible mistakes we've seen where people have been shot at checkpoints. And by the way, three members of the INC were shot dead by U.S. Marines at a checkpoint last week. And so he's worked very, very hard standing up for Iraqi people in his dialogue with the U.S. commanders here.
Hussein, your suggestion that Dr. Chalabi, you know, could be another Saddam Hussein seems unusually harsh.
Only because of one small, I saw one small article in the Boston Globe, and they quoted two Chalabis who are high officials in the IRC, who were based in Kuwait. And at that point, my antennas went up, and I'm very worried about what's going to happen. And I hope that Mr. Chalabi knows that Bechtel, what Bechtel did here with the big dig and the cost overruns. And I want him to be aware and have a hand and a say in deciding what kind of construction projects go on, and that it shouldn't just be American companies that are associated with the Republican Party.
This is Gail Harris again. Jumping in on the line, our satellite connection to Baghdad seems to be hiccuping once again, so while we're redialing, Dick, I wonder, Professor Bahram, if you'd like to respond to Hussein's point.
Yes, I am aware of these suspicions and fears outside of Iraq, not so much in Iraq. In Iraq, they don't know anything about Chalabi, very little. Saddam attacked him very viciously, and so some believed him, but most said that if Saddam is attacking him so viciously, maybe he's not so bad. But people don't know much about him, not yet. What I'll say is this way. I know Chalabi not very well. I met him a few times, but I mean, my impression, and I just say my view, there is absolutely no danger of Chalabi becoming another Saddam Hussein. He's a Democrat. I see another person who might become an Iraqi Saddam Hussein. Hello? I see another person who might become a Saddam Hussein. He's a Shia. His name is Muqtada Sadr. He's a junior clergy, a Shia clergy in Najaf, and he already has murdered a very senior clergy. And he's trying to kill another senior clergy in Najaf, and his people are very, very, very dangerous. So I'd say yes, I see one like that, but his name is Muqtada Sadr.
This is Dick Gordon in Baghdad. We are back. Our chirps have been taken out of our satellite connection. Gail, thanks for stringing the net there. We're going to go back to our phone lines now, 1-800-423-8255, and hear from Tom, who's called in from Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how you doing? I was just going to ask a very brief question, taking the issue slightly outside of Iraq itself, but within the region as a whole. How do you think, this is for the commentators, how do you think the other Arab nations in the region will view any government that comes to power while the U.S. is there? Will it be legitimate? Will it not be legitimate? And what will be the process to legitimize it within the region?
Professor, why don't you start on that, and then we'll hear from Saab here in Baghdad.
Well, if the government that comes in Iraq comes on top is a Shi'i fundamentalist, radical Islamist, and dictatorial, which it might be, I hope not, but it might be, I don't think the Arab countries will like it. If, however, the government that comes on top through a due democratic process with international supervision, American but international supervision, and it is legally elected, democratically elected, and it's been approved by the world public opinion, then I'd say the Arab governments will have to accept it, some with equanimity, some with misgivings, and Iran won't like it.
Saptos, talk to me just a bit about the sequence here. Would a democratic Iraq-led government take power in this country while the U.S. Army is still here providing protection security?
I think so. I think that the United States military has a number of very important roles to fill after the war ends. And by the way, I think the war is not over yet. But after the war ends, there are a number of things the U.S. Armed Forces can do here. They can find and remove Saddam's weapons of mass destruction arsenal, which Iraqis overwhelmingly do not want here. They can help secure the borders of Iraq. The United States forces can root out Saddam, remaining remnants of pro-Saddam loyalists, the Fedayeen Saddam.
What's the risk, though, that the association between whatever government comes into Iraq, the close association they have with an American military force, is going to taint them in some way in trying to improve relationships with Iran and trying to establish new relationships with Saudi Arabia and other neighboring states?
It's a very funny point, because if there's a democratically elected government in Iraq, then it will be the only legitimate Arab government, because where do the other Arab states draw their legitimacy from? Certainly not from democratic elections.
But they could look at Iraq and say the only legitimacy this government has is the fact that it knows the tanks of the U.S. Army are keeping it in power or giving it the credibility. Can't it cut both ways?
The tanks of the United States remove Saddam Hussein's dictatorship, liberated Iraq, and will remain until free and fair elections are held and until a democratic government is established. But I don't think that they'll remain to keep the government in power. The government will draw its legitimacy from the Iraqi people and from a constitution.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Next to Sarah, who's on the line from Cambridge. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you? I see on the news pictures of Iraqis rushing to the mosque and rushing to set up political parties, but I don't see any women in the pictures, and I was wondering, what role are women in Iraq going to be playing in rebuilding the society? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, thanks for your call. From Saab Setna here in Baghdad, give us a glimpse behind those closed doors that we're not behind. With the INC, is that a priority to make sure that women are involved in setting up civil institutions in this country?
Yes, it is. And I must say we've been very, very encouraged at the number of women that have been coming forward, coming to meet us, coming to our offices with ideas about participating in life. The caller may not have seen them in the pictures, but they are there. They're coming. I had a group of young women come to me. They're all in their 20s. Yesterday, saying that they wanted to set up their own newspaper, and would we help them? And we said, yes, we'd love to help them.
And do you have money to do that?
This is a great idea. We have a small amount of money. We don't have a huge amount of money. In fact, what we said to them is, look, walk before you run. Why don't you take a page in our newspaper, which we're planning to set up? But things like that we're very, very happy for.
Now, you were saying earlier, you're seeing some signs of a return to normal civil institutions already, almost coming from a grassroots level, from far away from where
you're
meeting.
We're seeing a great wellspring among the Iraqi people for the institutions of civil society. Iraqis have lived under this terrible dictatorship, but they haven't been cut off from the outside world. So many Iraqis now have relatives and friends abroad. They're getting the ideas from the connected world outside. And we're seeing movements towards setting up NGOs, unions, professional associations, student groups, student unions, free media. They're really at their very earliest stages, but the response has been overwhelmingly encouraging.
Amatsia Baram, I want to again rely on your longer perspective here from Washington. Are you encouraged by what you're seeing and what you're reading and what you're hearing? Is this the way it can work?
Okay, I'm both frightened and encouraged. I really know what the power of Shi'i clergy can be. Doesn't have to be, but can be. At the same time, Iraq, and again, there are very moderate and even liberal Shi'i clergy, but they are very quiet now. The radicals are recalcitrant. I'm very worried about that. At the same time, I know that the INC is doing an excellent job, and I know that other groups, too, are getting organized, the democratic groups, inside Baghdad, there, right now. So I think everything is hanging in the balance. America has a lot of input into it, of course, and I'm sure they'll do the right thing. But much is hanging in the balance, and I'm hopeful. I'm still hopeful. One thing I want to say, very, very important, returning life into normalcy is so crucial. And finding jobs, yes, finding jobs for people. Don't ever underestimate the tremendous importance of just normalcy and a certain kind of limited economic security. That stabilizes the arena tremendously.
I do want to ask, Saab, you one more question, if I can, and that is that the curious thing about coming into a situation like this where Saddam Hussein has been almost a god, an idol in his own making in this country, is that there is no local leader. There is nobody who, you know, is automatically being talked about as a natural heir. Is this a problem for the INC in terms of helping people identify the leaders who are here in Baghdad?
No, it's not a problem. There are local leaders. They have in many cases been hidden, been working clandestinely, or at the very lowest levels. One thing that the INC wants to see is the position of leader, the cult of personality, removed forever from Iraqi politics and society. There should be other people in the country that who are as significant and as important as the president or prime minister. And that's what we're trying to start to work towards.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Saab Setna is an advisor to Dr. Ahmed Chalabi. And Professor Amatzia Baram, thank you for being with us today.
You are welcome, Dick.
We also had with us Leith Kuba, head of the Iraqi National Group. Thanks also to the Iraqis who took the time to talk to us and bring us their points of view for the tape segment of the program, and to callers for joining. We had help today from the entire Connection staff, engineers at WBUR Boston. My Baghdad producer is Mark Allard. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection in Baghdad.